Back together again, you and I chatting it up, kicking off a brand new week, Monday, March 17th, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where I took a few minutes at the top of the show to point out what I view as the hypocrisy of majority Democrats in Hartford who say they want folks to have lower electric bills but don't really do anything about it. Greenwich Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio joined us to talk about last week's committee votes regarding bills to try and lower electric rates for Connecticut consumers. And we also welcomed writer Greta Ling Yuling, author of Decolonizing Ukraine, The Indigenous People of Crimea, and Pathways to Freedom.
Let me give you an example of why almost nothing gets done in Hartford on any sort of permanent level. Virtually nothing will get done in Hartford on any sort of a permanent level if it has any attribution to the Republican Party. And the Democratic Party in Hartford goes out of its way. The Democratic Party in Hartford goes out of its way to make sure, to save their own face, that anything bipartisan or anything with even the slightest tinge of a Republican participation here never really gets passed. I'm sure there are various times you could pick and choose, but you have to understand something. I've been watching this for decades, and it's the same thing over and over and over again. If the Republicans are going to look good by doing this, then the Democrats simply say, and their leadership from Matt Ritter and Bob Duff and Martin Looney and Gary Winfield on down, if the Republican Party in Hartford is going to do something substantive, the Democratic Party will do whatever it can to put the kibosh on it. What am I talking about? Let's rewind, if you will, to before the weekend, last week here. And if you want to follow along, there's a story here in the Connecticut News Junkie. You can check that out at ctnewsjunkie.com. That's ctnewsjunkie.com. Now, we have heard all the good bloviating from people in Hartford. Well, we have to come through with bipartisan solutions for our energy situation, right? Well, you know, we want participation and ideas from both sides to make this situation better. Well, the Democratic Party doesn't. And it's so bad. And you have to understand this, people, because I know a lot of people call this show and they don't have really have the time to follow this. They're busy. You don't have the time to look through 20 or 30 different sites to see who voted on what. But not only does the Democratic Party put out its best effort to quash anything that a Republican might have as a good idea, they make sure it doesn't come to a vote, because that's where the rubber meets the road in politics. Do you have the guts? Do you, excuse my French ladies, do you have the balls to vote yes or no on something? And what happens is the Republican Party in Hartford never gets or rarely gets a chance to ask that question. After much discussion, says here, Energy Committee opts for Democrats' bill to lower electricity rates. I'm shocked, aren't you? Subheadline, Republican efforts to shift the energy costs off ratepayers falls in committee amid a partisan debate. So again, here we go with the majority in Hartford treating Republican ideas like they're nothing but flakes of dandruff on the shoulder of Democrats. Now, you may say, well, Paul, you know, you're being awfully partisan here. Yes, I am. And it's for a good reason. Now, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back, and I'm going to read you the procedure. It's not boring. Actually, it's the kind of stuff you hear and you go, really? The procedures from last week as to how not only did any Republican ideas not ever get to a vote, there was a push to keep them from being voted on. Because in the end, it's all partisan Democrats on one side and it's all the Republicans on the other side. And this is precisely what I mean. And I will say this. When you hear a Democrat in Hartford say, we're going to lower electric rates, do not believe them. Do not believe them. I've got a better chance of being the opening day pitcher in a couple of weeks for the New York Yankees. With all the injuries they have, I have a better chance of throwing the first regular season pitch for the New York Yankees than you have of watching Democrats in Hartford do anything to lower electric rates. Now, you may say, well, Paul, that's a little extreme. I don't think so. Listen up, and I'll explain. So understand something. All this stuff you hear out of the Democratic majority in Hartford regarding lowering energy prices or even doing things. And look, we know this is going to take years and years and years and years. There's no magic button here. There's no magic bullet. But again, every single thing in Hartford gets bogged down in partisan politics. And ideas that might work, we don't know if they'll work or not, but ideas that might work, if there's even the littlest R stamp on them, meaning it came from a Republican, it's a non-starter in Hartford. You think the U.S. Congress is bad? I would tell you that Hartford is worse. Here's an example. Now, you may be saying, oh, that's just because you're a regular registered Republican. No, I'm going to read you, and this is a little bit in the weeds here, but bear with me here, and I'd love to hear what you think about this. 203-333-9422-333-WICC, because it's my contention that legislative Democrats in Hartford care more about their pet funding projects than they do about ratepayers here in Connecticut. I'm telling you. And if you don't think that's right, listen to this. Listen to this. And again, I am reading this with the full understanding that there is no magic bullet. You're not going to flip a switch, trip a couple of circuit breakers, and suddenly say, hey, the electric rates are low. No, this is a multi-decade problem we got into, and now it's going to take multiple decades to get out of. This happened last week. The Energy and Technology Committee debated two bills aimed at addressing Connecticut's electricity costs in its final scheduled meeting of the legislative session. So again, they kept this till the end, by the way, in this committee by saying, hey, we're not scheduled to meet anymore. Oh, darn it, we're out of time. The Republican proposals did not advance, but the committee voted to send the Democrats' priority energy bill to the Senate floor. So here's cowardice part one. And again, I'm sorry if I'm being, partisan on this, but I'm going to. Because enough is enough. And somebody's got to call out the crap that we hear from state legislators all the time in the Democratic majority about how, well, we're looking for good ideas. No, you're not. You're not, because you didn't even allow some Republican ideas to be voted on in the House or Senate floor. It's the oldest trick in the book. They kill them in committee, and they say, oh, what is this Republican dandruff on my shirt? The Republican bill was called an Act Concerning Protections for Consumer Access to Affordable Electricity. Now, here's the part the Democrats hated so much that they wouldn't even let it come to a vote. Listen, if you think an idea is crap, that's fine. At least have the balls to vote on it. Don't kill it in committee. Because this is what happens in Hartford all the time. And too many people get caught up in who's the governor, Lamont this, Malloy this, Lamont. Ned Lamont is not the problem. It's the people in his party that are the problem. The Republican bill would have shifted the funding for certain energy programs, including renewable energy subsidies and energy efficiency initiatives, from consumer electric bills to the state budget. So what the Republicans are saying in Hartford is, hey, we can keep these programs. Stop. You Democrats, stop making consumers pay for them. If you're so wrapped up in this stuff, make it a budget line and let's debate that budget line. But that's not the way the majority operates in the state, because they say they know better than you and you and you. And guess what, kids? You're the suckers, and many of you are the suckers for voting for these people. Oh, well, I know he's a Democrat, but he shows up at my son's rubber chicken Little League banquet. Oh, that's great. That's great. Republican leaders contended that that change would provide immediate relief to ratepayers burdened by some of the highest electricity costs in the nation, while Democrats expressed concerns about the, you ready for this, long-term consequences of such a shift. So you have the pedantic Democratic Party in Hartford saying, hey, all right, maybe this will make electric bills a little bit lower, okay, by maybe 20, 30, 40 bucks a month. But you filthy Republicans, you're not looking long-term here. The bill ultimately failed. And here's the key part, folks. You have to understand this. You have to understand this. This is the dirtiest trick they do in Hartford. The bill ultimately failed not on a direct vote on the merits, but through a procedural rejection. So if you walk around in the next few days saying, hey, I heard the guy on WICC said they voted against getting rid of the consumer benefits charge, whatever that charge is. No, 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 no. It never got to a vote. And that's how the majority in Hartford kills a lot of stuff when it comes to energy, when it comes to crime regulation, when it comes to the ability of cops to actually fight crime. The committee first considered a motion to add the bill to the agenda for a final vote. That motion introduced by two people who've been on this show, State Representative Tracy Mara of Darien, a Republican, and Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio of Greenwich. Now, they said, hey, the bill had over 750 pieces of public testimony in support, and we should just vote on this. The proposal included cutting the public benefits charges from electric bills, capping the price of power purchase agreements, and allowing nuclear and hydropower to compete with solar and wind. So you're sitting there going, it's not a bad idea. Bring in more nuclear power, more hydropower, see how it stacks up, how expensive is it? And for God's sake, get rid of that public benefits charge and let's put it in as a regular line item in the budget. However, here it comes. Democrats opposed adding it to the agenda. Representative Jonathan Steinberg, Democrat Westport, co-chair of the committee, here's his argument that, quote, most of the in-person testimony we heard opposed the bill and that many of the provisions were non-starters. Jesus, John, can you be more arrogant? I hate when either side, especially the Democratic majority in Hartford, it says, well, this is a non-starter. You know what that means? Well, we're not going to consider it. It's got an R in front of it. My God, what are you people kidding? Consider a Republican bill in Hartford? He and other committee members warned that shifting renewable energy funding to the state budget could leave clean energy programs vulnerable to future budget cuts, potentially reducing funding for energy efficiency programs, workforce training, and home energy improvements. Here's the bottom line. The majority Democrats in Hartford don't give a crap how high your electric bills are. They just don't. They just don't. I don't understand what is so hard to understand here. They don't care, especially if it's a viable idea that might be generated by a Republican. They don't care. I mean, you've got John Steinberg here, Democrat Westport. I know he's on the radio station and the other day parts here. I choose not to even bother on this show. But for God's sake, well, these are non-starters. And if that's the arrogance, people, of the leadership in Hartford. It is pure, unmitigated arrogance that they don't even entertain some Republican ideas for a vote. For a vote. They are so connected to this program and that program and energy efficiency and green renewables. They are so committed to that. What they say essentially is the majority says, on an everyday basis, screw the ratepayers.
We opened the program with something I couldn't get to on Friday because I was off or back here raring to go for a full week. Some Republican proposals that didn't even get advanced out of committee in Hartford. It makes my head explode. It should make yours explode, too, regarding energy policy and the so-called promise made by the majority in Hartford to try and make energy bills cheaper. And joining us right now, Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio, who is the ranking Senate member and one of the ranking Republicans on that committee. Hey, Ryan, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
Great, Ryan. Thanks for taking the time. Ryan, I don't know, man. I give you credit because some of the stuff I've read in The Current and in The Mirror and in The News Junkie about, you know, Ryan, some of the excuses being made for not even advancing some Republican ideas here on trying to lower electric rates doesn't mean they would work, doesn't mean they would even get a full vote on the floor of the Senate. But the fact that some of these, Ryan, never even made it out of committee and the reasoning for it, I don't know about you, but it just drives me crazy. So explain to my listeners here what's going on.
Well, I and other House and Senate Republicans co-authored a six-point plan to try to reduce the sky-high electricity bills that we're having to pay in this state. Among those proposals is to cut the public benefits charge from our electric bill. My argument is that's a hidden tax that funds roughly 50 different government programs. And if those programs should exist, they should be funded through the budget and the existing taxes that we pay, like everything else that's important in our state. Therefore, they would also be vetted every couple of years in public rather than just continuously be funded for decades on end sometimes without kind of being re-examined. Now, that proposal did get a public hearing. We had over 750 people in the state submit testimony in favor of our proposal. I think first and foremost, because of the proposal to cut the public benefits tax in the state. I was sitting next to a longtime state representative during that public hearing that lasted like 14 hours. And he said that he can't even remember seeing a proposal, a bill that had so much testimony submitted in favor of it. Unfortunately, that public outcry was not good enough for our Democratic colleagues. They wouldn't put the proposal even on the agenda to get an up or down vote out of the Energy Committee. We tried to make a motion to open up the agenda and force a vote to on the proposal, and the Democrats on the committee voted it down. Listen, hopefully we can still work across the aisle to get something positive done. But this proposal that's been on the table for roughly 2 years that I've been pounding the table on and other Republicans have been pounding the table on for 2 years to cut the public benefits tax and do more. We know it would lower rates. We know it's long overdue. It's the only proposal on the table that would substantially lower rates. And yet it continues to be rejected by the people in charge of our state.
It drives me crazy, Ryan, and it must be disappointing to you when on this issue and others in Hartford, the majority will come out and say, well, you know, they'll take a look at serious proposals, or they love to use the phrase or the words non-starter. And even other stuff that you had in here regarding allowing utilities to buy cheaper renewable energy credits, I mean, it's mind-numbing, Ryan, and if this is a bad idea, let it come to the floor of the House and Senate for a full vote. But, you know, Ryan, I have said for years and years that the people who fear change the most are the people who are worried the most that it might work. And to me, when I see this, we can't do this because it'll affect A, B, or C. Well, then, Ryan, where does change come from? Stop making promises if you're not really going to do anything.
That's such a keen observation that sometimes the people who fear change the most are the ones worried that it'll succeed.
Yeah.
This would succeed. Listen, it's good government. It's common sense. We shouldn't be paying for basically statewide $800 million in taxes through our electric bill for over 50 different government programs that don't get regularly reexamined and updated and reapproved by the legislature. I mean, there's an old saying that you would never know how much government you'll never miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly the case with this proposal, that if we were to cut a lot of these programs and therefore cut people's electric bills by over $500 per year for the average household, over $500 per year of savings, the programs that would be cut down or be reduced and there would be efficiencies found, we'll never miss those. People are overtaxed in this state. They're overcharged for electricity. The cost of living generally is far too high, and people are crying for a change. And I think that change would be more than welcome. And, you know, all the naysayers about this proposal over 2 years have had over 2 years to offer a positive alternative solution. They haven't. It's about time we try something different. It's about time for a change.
Finally, Ryan, what, if anything, in that committee or in any energy proposals do you think has a good chance, maybe, of coming to a final vote and being approved? Are there maybe one or two things that actually are good ideas that, may have an effect in the long run or not?
I think, listen, I have a good relationship with my Democratic colleagues on the committee. I actually do like them. You know, we have honest disagreements, mm-hmm. but we try to find common ground. And I'm hopeful that maybe we'll be able to cut down a few of the public benefits programs in some sort of compromise bill. Maybe we'll be able to add cheaper renewable energy credits to reduce the cost of our bills instead of having these endlessly expensive renewable energy credits.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll do more for nuclear. Maybe the governor's office at our urging will do something with the federal government and New York on natural gas. But most likely what would happen is there'll be some compromise legislation that Representative Mara, myself, Senator Needleman, and Representative Steinberg can find, where we cut down a few of the public benefits programs for size, maybe make some changes to the renewable portfolio standard to make it slightly more affordable, and maybe reduce some of the subsidies in policy for electric demand that are going to stress our grid in the future. That's what I'm hoping for in a realistic world.
All right. Republican State Senator Ryan Fazio, friend of the station. Ryan, always good to have you on. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Ryan Fazio there, Greenwich Republican State Senate member. And yeah, I mean, he's trying. Right now, though, a couple of minutes on Ukraine. And this is now even a more growing concern than it was months or over the past 3 years with this Russian invasion. A lot of us have friends of Ukraine ancestry or hail from that part of the world. My son and his mom have friends there through an international organization. Joining us right now, teaching professor at the University of Michigan, the author of Beyond Money, The Deportation and Repatriation of the Crimean Tatars. She's an expert on that part of the world. Greta Lynn Hewling is the guest. Her new book, Decolonizing Ukraine, The Indigenous People of Crimea, and Pathways to Freedom. Greta, hi. It's Paul at WICC in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Your interest in that area and your critical study of that area, where does that come from? Why are you such an expert on this area?
You know, it goes back 30 years. I lived there for a year and a half, you know, starting in the late 90s, mm-hmm. and have been doing research ever since. I was, I was a Russian and East European studies major, and I'd never heard of this people, the Crimean Tatars. They're an indigenous people of Ukraine, and their story closely parallels that of the Native Americans in the United States. And so mm-hmm. that was what originally drew me to them.
Does any of that have reverberations, Greta, into what's going on today? Is there a threat of that going on, thread, I should say, of that in the Ukraine today or not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my book is my latest book is about, you know, Ukraine's process of ridding itself of the effects of Russian domination. Mm-hmm. And it is the indigenous people who are both the most affected and provide the moral justification for reclaiming a great deal of the Ukrainian territory because they had an independent statehood there and because of their experiences of dispossession, right? So just as there's a declaration of human rights, there's a declaration of on the rights of indigenous people. That's very important. And then another thing to keep in mind is that they have been the leaders and the architects within the Zelensky administration for thinking through how to demilitarize Crimea and also to think about carefully reintegrating the people who have been occupied by Russian rule for a decade.
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned that, Greta. Take us back a decade even more. So let's rewind the tape back when they used to have a thing called tape. Let's rewind the tape here and set up for my audience. How did we get here today where we are with Russian forces in Ukraine, some Ukraine forces in Russia, stuff that happened during the Obama years, stuff that happened post-World War II? How did we get here?
Oh, well, I mean, how we got there, I think a good starting point is 2014. Mm-hmm. Ukraine is in the midst of a revolution of dignity. People are mobilizing so that Ukraine can develop closer ties with Western Europe. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of this revolution, Russia feels very threatened by the westward direction that Ukraine appears to be taking and occupies Crimea unlawfully, using completely illegitimate means to control Crimea. So it occupies Crimea, and then, of course, the war in Donbass starts.
Yeah.
Now, if we dial back even further, we can recall that in 1994, the United States promised that if Ukrainian sovereign territory was invaded, that we would step in militarily.
I remember that.
Yeah. So here we are. And, you know, at the time Crimea was occupied, there were sanctions, but they weren't particularly robust. And so Putin was essentially encouraged to launch the war over the east. And then, you know, gradually over time, he's gained more and more territory.
As we try to make sense of a very intricate situation here that people far and wide have some sort of connection to, whether it's emotionally, spiritually, or through some family connections, Greta Lynn Euling is the guest. Her book, Decolonizing Ukraine, How the Indigenous People of Crimea, remade themselves after the Russian occupation. Greta, and I'm sure, God, that you're thinking about this 24/7, 365. Where do we go from here? There's so many aspects of this. The White House, Mr. Trump, the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin, Volodymyr Zelensky, Europe, the American contingent. How do you think, if in any way, this thing stops or gets somewhat solved, if that's even a word, in the short term?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, as you point out, it's a very thorny question. And I think it's imperative and in the United States' strategic interests to continue to support Ukraine militarily in becoming so that they can defend themselves in a very real way, not just, you know, removing the limitations on how they use armaments.
Sure.
So that it can become free, strong, and capable of defending itself. That's really the only point that we should think about stopping support or disengaging. And then, of course, you know, the first item on the agenda for peace is security guarantees, ideally through joining NATO. Now, you could say, well, there's a lot of obstacles to that. Mm. And there are. there are that we can talk about. But, you know, this really has to do with food security, nuclear security, energy supply, thwarting the potential for even more massive migration, mm-hmm. and encouraging war crimes and territorial expansion.
But Vladimir Putin is in the middle of this. And what does he want? Would he stop, do you think, with Crimea, which, again, this happened years ago, but with the amount of land he has here? I mean, what is his ultimate goal? Now, I've watched interviews with him. He clearly, Greta, pines for the old Soviet Union. He's pretty much said that. That, I don't think, is happening. But what do you think makes him stop here? Because, you know, when you've got thousands of nukes, it kind of lets you write some of the rules, doesn't it?
It does. So what I would say, like, what he wants is unquestionably to eradicate modern Ukraine as we know it,
mm-hmm.
and make it part of Russia.
Yeah.
So that's what he wants. But should he be allowed to do that? Absolutely not. The Russian economy is in worse shape than many people realize.
Oh,
inflation,
sure.
Inflation is over 10%. He's had to rely on mercenaries and foreign troops to continue prosecuting this war. And, you know, as the, you know, I think that our leverage, you know, we should seek ways to increase our leverage rather than really relinquishing it. So, you know, like, one of the problems is, like, both the constitution of Ukraine and Russia lay claim to some of the same territory.
Yeah.
Significant groups in both countries strictly oppose any territorial or political compromise.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways that I like to think about it is in more of a stepwise fashion, right? Yeah. With the first objective being the not just the ceasefire, but the security guarantee.
Yeah.
The second step, and then a second step is actually not recognizing any of the Russian occupied territories as Russian, mm-hmm. officially. Maintaining our focus that those are contested territories that Ukraine under international law has sovereignty over, right? And that would enable us to, at a later date, perhaps not this week or next or even next year, be in a better position on a long-term basis to see those territories returned to Ukraine.
So are we looking at maybe, and I've thought this, Greta, are we looking maybe at short-term, long-term, as you say, a situation that we kind of in a similar way have with the Koreas here, where you have both sides maybe staring down each other in an eventual hope that there can be some sort of reunification, like we're looking at the Koreas, or we can have a settlement over disputed land? Because I think when people hear the words security guarantees, they kind of ask, Greta, don't they, well, what does that mean, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your comparison.
Yeah.
I think that's super interesting. Thank you for raising that. And I think really the only reason that we can't, the one key difference between the Koreas,
yeah.
is precisely Putin's expansionist philosophy. When
sure.
he gets done swallowing Ukraine, he will move on to other countries like Moldova and the Baltic countries of Latvia and Lithuania. He's already making inroads into Georgia, right? And so Western Europe is rightly concerned that the joke inside the Russian inside the Russian army is, you know, we're going to stop when we reach Berlin. It's only partially facetious.
Jeez. Man,
that's the difference, right? Is this expansionist objective.
Yeah. I thought we had passed that in history. Thanks so much,
right.
Greta. The name of the book, Decolonizing Ukraine, How the Indigenous People of Crimea Remade Themselves after Russian occupation. Greta Lynn Hewling. Greta, thanks so much. Good luck with the book, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Greta Hewling. U-E-H-L-I-N-G.